And we're here with Alan Ferguson and my amazing co-host, Bo Franklin. And go for it, my man.
Hi, guys. Bowden Franklin here. Unfortunately, my co-host Mara is sick, so that's too bad. But should be a great show anyways. So really quickly, if anyone's at home, I suggest if they have a computer, they pull up crimesagainstpeace.org. Once again, crimesagainstpeace.org. It's really, really amazing. And for my intro, I wanted to talk a little bit about, I don't know, how it spoke to me and what I got from it. First of all, when I look at the website, immediately I see two big quotes. The first being, "Mankind must put an end to war, or war will put an end to mankind," which is a great one. It's by said by JFK, and really inspirational. And I think it really kind of wraps up the whole movement that Crimes Against Peace is trying to do. Anyways, and I would suggest that people go ahead and look through the rest of it. I can read you the mission statement right now, which is really great. Alan, please jump in if I say anything wrong or you want to correct or specify.
Okay, go ahead, so, bro.
This mission statement is, the mission of the crimesagainstpeace.org is to state and document the legal and ethical principles that war making itself is unlawful and wrong, in the hopes that awareness of this principle will help induce action and policies needed to heed President Kennedy's dire warning that we must eliminate war or war will eliminate us. In order to move forward in this direction without losing one's moral compass, it is essential to be guided by an affirmative vision of peace and, in other words, the words of Martin Luther King, an all-embracing and unconditional love for all of mankind. I think that's a really great mission statement, and I really suggest, actually, to anyone who's listening out there who can check it out, do. It's very interesting, and you can scroll through. There's a lot of information, even on the first page, but go through, and yeah. So I would like to just really quickly say the site inspired me, and it has lots of really interesting pictures that, I don't know, they're, some of them are heart-wrenching, but they're definitely interesting. Okay, so Alan, do you mind telling us a little bit what crimesagainstpeace.org is all about?
Well, to me, it's intended to shift paradigms from the dominant paradigm in which war and preparations for war, or the war machine, or what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex, is seen as a way to solve problems, or at least as a necessary evil for protection and security and the solving of problems, changing from that paradigm to a paradigm in which war is recognized for what it is, namely as a huge problem and a huge generator of problems, and something that is, in fact, already illegal and unethical in its initiation. My belief is that only through such a paradigm shift can we heed President Kennedy's warning that mankind must put an end to war, or war will put an end to mankind. I also want to try to get to the bottom of the war dilemma, the roots of the predominant paradigm. Why is it that despite all of the writings against war, which you'll see on this website, going back 2,500 years to Lao Tzu and coming up to St. Augustine, and that's just in the ancient wisdom part of the website, if any of you want to check that out. Despite the fact that philosophers and politicians and statesmen and leaders have decried warfare for at least 2,500 years, it still persists.
Well, I know there's an article that I was reading, I think in the New Internationalist, that basically talks about how there's always money for war. And the current toll for the Afghanistan war is $750 billion.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct figure.
It's really shocking. And I think we don't fully realize, we see war way too much as a norm, as, oh, we're in war in Afghanistan, oh, we're in or at war in Iraq, and so on. When really it should be not a norm, it should be a surprise and a shock, and really something that we see as horrific. I would like to really say on the ancient wisdom part of the page, it has something really interesting that I think really spoke to me most is I think it was Lao Tzu says, "Hence, even a victory is a funeral," and I think that really sums up war as a whole there. Even when we see that we've won, there's still death on both sides. So what's the point? If we're doing it to save lives, why should we fight?
Right. And one metaphor that I have that I think helps us understand what's going on and why war is to imagine ourselves going up in a satellite and looking down at the Earth and seeing what we see. One thing we see is bombs going off, smoke and fire and explosions going off in many parts of the world, but especially in the Middle East, in Syria and Libya and Egypt and Gaza Strip and Israel. And we see that increasingly, or at least it's not abating. And for example, in Iraq, we thought we'd won after sacrificing thousands of American lives and tens or hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives, and that too is exploding, and we can see that from our satellite. We also see explosions in Afghanistan, Pakistan, the Congo, Mali, Nigeria, Libya, Bahrain, the Central African Republic, and so forth. What is the accumulative effect of all this conflagration? Especially on the environment and on the people. Well, what else can we see that might help us understand what's going on? Well, we see a flood of tanks, helicopters, bombers, missiles, attack rifles, etc., flowing out of the U.S. especially and to many other countries in the world, especially in the Middle East, including some of those places where we see the explosions going off, namely Egypt, Israel, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, etc. Could there be a connection between the shipment of arms to the Middle East, especially by this country, and all the conflagration there? It seems to me that we're adding fuel to the fire, or pouring gasoline on a tinderbox.
Let's try it again. Sam, thanks for calling. Listen up. You're on the air.
Hey, I just want to say this is a great topic, and I think it's something that we really need to talk about more. And, I just wanted to add a little bit about, we were talking, or someone mentioned about why is there such this huge industry behind war? And, I've traveled a lot. I've been to almost 50 countries, and I spent some time in Pakistan in 2007 up in the northern part where it's supposed to be really dangerous. And
it is dangerous there.
Yeah, but the people there are just human beings, and they're just trying to survive. And, it's actually one of my favorite places that I've been. I loved it there. People were super kind to us. And, when we were traveling around, there would be, this school was built by EU or this bridge was built by EU or whatever. And, when we were there, these people are very passionate and love their families. And after we had left and we heard, about what was happening with drone strikes and what the U.S. was doing over there, it's the worst possible thing that could we could do to create peace. It's just the opposite. And I just wanted to say, if you want to create a stable government, instead of killing people or attacking people, you need to educate people, give them economic growth. And I just read this wonderful study about that actually this someone had done a bunch of research saying that if you have economic growth and economic stability, then democracy will follow, where we try to go about the opposite, where we go to war, and like in Afghanistan and Iraq, where it's just total wreck. There's no way that they're gonna, they're totally unstable, and there's no way they're gonna have a democracy there. So I just wanted to add that, and thank you for the great call, and you guys are great. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, what you said about drone strikes is so incredibly relevant, because how about instead of spending all the money on that kind of technology when you can blow people up, how about some schools and hospitals? How about some schools and hospitals? Thank you so much.
There's so many studies that show that if you educate women, especially women, but the community, that terrorism goes down, that all these, you know, problems go down. And there's another really interesting thing that I heard recently about shows the life of this person, this young man that had moved to a city in Iraq, and he was trying to make a living, and he was just living in utter poverty. And anyways, these people befriended him, and he ended up becoming a suicide bomber. But it was just completely, like, he had, in a way, it totally made sense from coming from his economic standpoint and his viewpoint, that was the people that they gave him money, they gave him food, they gave him this opportunity to have a life, that there was no jobs, there was nothing there for him. So if we could go in and create jobs and help these young people, then, you know, it's just such a wreck over there. But anyways, I just think this is a great topic, and thanks a lot. And
thank you. What a great call, man.
Okay.
You're totally right, girlfriend. Thanks.
I think that's a really great thank you, caller, that we oftentimes don't see, well, the enemy in quotes, as human. And it's been very difficult as, like, oh, we're going down there, and don't worry, every single person that the U.S. Army kills is a bad person who's been killing U.S. citizens, and it's, when really it's not. And the majority of people getting affected by war are completely innocent, and innocent bystanders, and have lives, and that are human and loving, and of course don't deserve it in the slightest bit. Really quickly, before we get into the really interesting topic about why war exists, which I think is going to be great, what inspired you to start this, Alan?
Well, I've been thinking about these issues for a long time, and there's actually a bio of me on this website, which you could take a look at. But my father was a bomber pilot in World War II.
Wow.
And I became very interested in war at an early age, and thought that really war was honorific and noble and a really important good thing to engage in sometimes, at least. And that was, you know, my adoption of the dominant paradigm. Then when I was a teenager, I went to Munich and saw a whole block totally bombed out that was being preserved at the time, sort of like a museum to show people the destructiveness of the war. And that was one of the things that really made me begin to question whether war is a useful tool.
Thanks for calling. Listen up. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. This is Lila Johnston. Alan asked me to call in, and I've been working on the project with him for about a month, and I just am really appreciative. I have a comment and a question, if that's okay.
It's totally okay. Thank you so much for the call.
Yeah. So the comment is just that there is a lot of things to worry about these days, but there's also a lot of headway being made in the opposite direction. And I went in September to Geneva to the UN on a conference of developing infrastructures for peace. And there's this whole movement occurring, trying to build departments of peace. It's like we have departments of defense and ministries of war, things like that. They're trying to build departments of peace within governments. And Costa Rica has one, and Canada will have one very soon. They've been doing a lot of work there. And so that was just a really awe-inspiring conference to see people from all over the world come together and say, we must do something, we must create something and train people in peacemaking. So that's my one comment, and I'm really appreciative to you, Alan, for all the work you do and your wonderful heart. And I guess my question is, well, what we're talking about is a lot of legal principles. You know, Alan, you are trained as a lawyer, and my question to you is, how can we leverage the law in these places in the world, or how do you see it being leveraged to actually, truly prevent war from occurring?
Thank you, Lila. That's a wonderful question, and I do have a response to it. First, I want to thank you for your help with this website and your inspiration.
Don't hang up, Lila. Don't hang up.
Okay, I won't.
And you're helping me get through some of the difficulty of dealing with these heavy issues, and it's partly because you do have a vision of peace. And I added that because of you and your influence, I added that to the mission statement, that we have to be guided by some vision of peace. We can't just be trying to defeat war, because that actually kind of gets us into a warlike attitude. I just want to point out that you're not alone in seeing a vision of peace as really centrally important. In fact, Seneca said in the first century, this quote, which I think is wonderful. You can turn to it if you've got your computer under ancient wisdom. He says, just as the members of the body agree with one another, because the preservation of each conduces to the welfare of the whole, so men refrain from injuring one another, because we are born for community of life. For society can exist in safety only through the mutual love and protection of the parts of which it is composed.
Yeah.
Okay, listen. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
You know, Alan adores you. Listen, I got to give you a shout-out, girl. You know, I was just perusing through some of the videos I have from Kids Unleashed, and, oh, my God, I have this, like, this really amazing, it's a couple of minutes of you at a Kids Unleashed, like, you know, this really cute little kid, and you were spewing this amazing, mind-boggling poetry. Oh, my God, thanks for what you're doing, man. Thanks for what you're doing, the community. I've been doing it a really long time, so, oh, my God, thank you, a million, zillion thank yous.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, and that's why I do Regeneration Festival each year, is because I think that I'm kind of working at the root of it, which is providing young people an experience that they can always refer to. Like, oh, you remember that day we were all in the park listening to music? No one was high on anything except for each other and community, and everyone was uplifting, and they can have that reference point of like, oh, that's what peace is. That's what we can always work for wherever we are. It's really my pleasure to be a part of all this and to be a part of this community.
Thank you, Lila.
Don't go away yet. there's another part of your question that's really important and that I'd like to try to answer, and that is, how can law be used to facilitate peace and to stop war? And it's obvious that it hasn't stopped war, despite the legal precedents for stopping war. But I still think that words that Robert Jackson, who was a U.S. Supreme Court justice and chief prosecutor for the U.S. at Nuremberg, told the tribunal, he said that the ultimate step in preventing periodic wars, which are inevitable in a system of international lawlessness, is to hold statesmen accountable to law. And the world community formed the International Criminal Court in 2002 just exactly to do that. And just listen to the statement from the preamble of that statute. It's called a statute, but it's a treaty.
And yeah.
It says, conscious that all peoples are united by common bonds, their cultures pieced together in a shared heritage, and concerned that this delicate mosaic may be shattered at any time. For that essential reason, the world community created this court to try to hold statesmen and military leaders and others who might commit genocide or war crimes or crimes against humanity or the crime of aggression, which is a crime against peace, hold them responsible for what they're doing, and in that way deter and put on trial war, basically.
Right, and I think maybe for the listeners, because I didn't know what Nuremberg was before I met you and we started talking about this, what was Nuremberg? What initiated all of these actions towards making war an actual international crime punishable by international law?
Great. Wonderful question. I didn't even give that one to you, nor any of the others. Well, the United States, as I say in the on the homepage of the website, the term "crimes against peace" sounds like something that was probably invented by anti-war protesters in the 60s, but in fact, it comes directly from the treaty between the United States, Britain, France, and the Soviet Union that set up the Nuremberg Tribunal. The Nuremberg Tribunal was set up to try the Nazi leaders for three types of crimes: war crimes, crimes against humanity, and crimes against peace, including the crime of aggression. So that's where that comes from. And Justice Jackson actually saw it as initiating with the just war doctrine of centuries long ago, when there was a clear distinction between aggressive war, which was regarded as unjust, and defensive war, which is regarded as just. So it's actually a borrowing from that Catholic just war doctrine of the 12th through 19th or 18th centuries, but it was put into effect by the United States, especially, and also England, France, and the Soviet Union in the Nuremberg Tribunals.
And so why, even though this is a law and it's illegal in international courts to commit wars of aggression, why is the United States in Afghanistan? Why is the United States in Iraq?
Great question.
Okay, well, there are people who, including lots of international lawyers, who would say that it's not clearly established that aggression or crimes against peace is a crime because it hasn't been prosecuted very much. And the International Criminal Court Treaty, for example, or it may be unique in this, says that aggression is one of the most serious crimes of concern to the international community, but it doesn't define it, and it doesn't allow the court to assert its jurisdiction over that crime. So, in large part, what I'm trying to do is to call attention to the fact that the U.S. led the world right after World War II, not only in Nuremberg, but also in the Tokyo trials of the Japanese leaders, in establishing as a legal principle the idea that war making itself is illegal. And in fact, the Nuremberg Tribunal said it's the most serious international crime because it lays the groundwork for all the others. You can see that in Iraq. We wouldn't have had to worry about torture or killing civilians or polluting the place with depleted uranium or killing civilians, if I didn't already say that, if we hadn't had the war in the first place. So, I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and sorry if I'm being a blabbermouth, but it reminds me a lot of what Martin Luther King did, because what you're doing is trying to bring America back to its roots. Like, remember, America, you are the one who said war making is illegal. And Martin Luther King did the same thing. He said, remember, America, you're the one who wrote at the founding of your country that all men are created equal. So let's live up to our creed. Let's live up to our words that we wrote. And so I hear you really saying, okay, listen, America, this is what we did. It was a beautiful act at the end of a horrendous world war to make war making illegal. Now let's remember who we are and stick to that and not enlist all of our kids in the ROTC, which is happens a lot where I'm in. I'm in Colorado right now.
Lila, thank you so much. I gotta spit some stuff to you. Listen, you know, I want you to think about this after you hang up, and just, I'm one of your biggest fans. Your history is dynamic, it's intelligent, and you're so inspiring and thought-provoking for your amazing work. And thank you so much, girlfriend. I totally adore you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcus. Have a good night, guys.
Bye-bye. Good night, Lila.
Thanks.
And I might add here that Lila is not the only one who's helped me with this website. I also have a friend who used to be one of my students at University of New Mexico in 2008, Jessica Andrews, who did all the wonderful graphics that you see under the Ancient Wisdom part of the website. And she put them on my site from Kenya, where she is now.
Wow. We got to go to commercials. Lila, thank you. Your work does not go unnoticed. All right. We're back.
I have something to say really quick. Reminder to everyone or anyone who's just listening, Bowden Franklin, Marcus, Alan Ferguson, Marcus. Oh, we have a caller.
No, we don't. Actually, we do. Thanks for calling. Listen up. You're on the air.
Hi, my name's Lori.
Hey,
and I'm
thanks, Lori. Thanks for calling.
When I was a grad student in political science and studied international relations and comparative politics, I'm fascinated by what you're doing. But there's a couple of monkey wrenches that, you know, we have to overcome and change our culture. And I don't know if you've talked about the industrial war machine, because our corporations, which control the media, also make armaments. And that's one reason we're so invested in being everywhere patrolling the world. So I wanted to throw that out there. And the whole sovereignty issue, you know, we tend to not want to submit ourselves to the world court. And unless everybody else joins together and says, hey, we're going to make you go to court, we don't go to court because we're still the big superpower. So I didn't know if you talked about any of that, but thought I'd throw it in the ring.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Yeah, you're right. We haven't talked much about those things yet, just some minor references to them. I do think that the profit motive is a major factor behind the war machine, or the military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower aptly called it in 1960 or 61. And we see that, if we look carefully enough, in lots of different ways. One obvious one is that the more trade in arms that we do, the richer the arms manufacturers, the arms merchants, and much more stable and wealthy in a sense becomes the Pentagon.
Right.
And at the same time, by waging wars where part of the motivation is to get access to resources like oil, then the same activity benefits the oil companies. So there's this huge profit motive, and those companies, I think, are laughing all the way to the bank, so to speak, when people are either afraid of war and therefore beef up their military machines, especially in this country, but elsewhere too. Or they actually engage in war.
Well, you know, I haven't seen figures lately, but I believe that our military budget is greater than the sum total of all the military budgets around the world, including China and the Russians.
That's my understanding, too. And in addition to that, consonant with it, we are by far the largest exporter of arms in the world. As a matter of fact, in 2011, the total arms sales for the world were $88.5 billion. $66 billion of that were sales by the United States. And of that, almost 50% was a huge weapons sale, the biggest in the U.S. history, to Saudi Arabia, which is hardly a democratic country and hardly a country that supports human rights.
Right. It kind of harkens back to the days when we would support the so-called banana republics because they had fruit and other resources, cheap labor that we wanted. And then eventually those countries, for the most part, get mad at you and throw you out. And then you have the conflict with the Sandinistas back in the 80s and all kinds of stuff. And it does go back to the profit motive. And, it kind of goes to the debate our own country's facing with the whole 1%, you know, the loss of the, or the narrowing of the middle class. It's the same 1% largely that are in charge of the corporations that are basically controlling armaments and war. And so I think it's a great conversation that you're initiating, and, you know, grassroots works. So keep at it.
Thank you. I think
thank you,
you
very
also
much
mentioned the U.S. Not subjecting itself to the jurisdiction of the international courts, and you'll see a whole page which is actually several pages on that, under undermining law on the website. And that, just very briefly, the two main ways that I know of that we've done that are to withdraw our submittal to the compulsory jurisdiction of the World Court, which we did during the proceeding against the United States initiated by Nicaragua for mining Nicaragua's harbors and so forth. And then the other thing is that not only have we not ratified the Rome Statute creating the International Criminal Court, Congress, pursuant to the Bush administration's urging, in 2002 passed a law called the American Service Members Protection Act, which forbids cooperation with any investigation or prosecution by the World Court.
That's really creepy.
By the International Criminal Court.
Right. Well, and if you're a serviceman who commits a crime, particularly against a woman in, say, Japan, they don't have jurisdiction to prosecute always. So, you know, that's kind of like a diplomatic immunity that we give soldiers. And while I support our service people who believe in what they're doing and risking their lives, people who do, you know, rape and mayhem should be punished. And unfortunately, some of our leaders just still don't get that when you harm innocents, you recruit for your opponent.
Absolutely. Listen, I got to ask you this, ma'am. What a great call. You're so articulate and intelligent. What do you do? Are you a resident of Taos?
I am. I'm actually in hospitality here in Taos, because that is our industry.
Right.
But I have a master's degree, as I mentioned earlier, and thank you for the compliment. It's kind of nice to dust off those brain cells and have the conversations that
Thank you. Oh, my God. You're operating at a very high level of intelligent activity. My God. Thank you so much. Are you a regular listener or just occasional?
Occasional, because I have to admit, Big Bang Theory usually gets my attention. But I have listened before and was tuning in on my way home tonight.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It really means a lot to it. Thank you, ma'am.
I have.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I think the caller made a very important point about the 1%, and I don't mean to be that guy shouting 99% and going to revolt, because that's not who I am. But I think in the U.S.'s case, and I think in the majority of the world's case, the majority of the power for the nation is held in the 1%, and that happens to be mostly Caucasian men. And that's a serious issue, which means minorities aren't getting a say, and women aren't getting a say. And it's a pretty serious issue that I don't think we're addressing. We're seeing
it's a very serious issue.
Yeah, and you'll get to vote and everything like that, but they're all held, the big decisions are made by the 1%, and that's a serious issue. And then the other thing I have to say is, we touched on this before, when the U.S. was considering going into Syria, there was no talk of the fact that it's actually illegal because of the treaty we signed with the U.N.
Absolutely.
It was very interesting to me that we decided, like, oh, should the U.S. do it? Will Congress approve it? Is it a good idea financially? But we never discussed that it's actually illegal. And I don't think – I was totally unaware until we had the radio show with Alan, actually, about Syria, that there was a law banning nations to take military action against others if not approved by the U.N. And the U.S. got no approval from the U.N. and simply decided that they might go into Syria. Now, fortunately, we did not, but it's very shocking to see that we didn't even consider that it was illegal.
And that also happened in Iraq. There was apparent consideration of the issue by the Bush administration, because they tried to get the UN Security Council to affirmatively approve the invasion of Iraq. The Security Council refused, and the U.S. went in anyway, just ignoring the Security Council and ignoring the United Nations Charter and the principle of crimes against peace.
And was the U.S. punished, or I guess prosecuted at all for it?
Bad U.S.
No,
bad U.S.
Basically, there's no court with jurisdiction and power to do that. And the International Criminal Court, as I said, was set up to try to stop and punish crimes against peace, genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. But the U.S. is not subject to its jurisdiction. And as I said, it has passed a law that basically forbids all public officials from cooperating with that court.
Wow. And, you know, it's really weird. In the beginning, the United States really pumped up the World Court. They really pumped up the Hague. You know, like Bush and Cheney can't even go to countries in South America because they'll be arrested for, like, war crimes. And it's so weird, the dichotomy, like, what's happened in the last decades over, you know, it's an explosion of weirdness, basically. And comment on that, Alan.
Okay, well, I'm into quotes, as you might have guessed. And one of them relates to what you just said, and this is from Robert Jackson, the chief American prosecutor at Nuremberg, who was also a justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. And part of this I already said before, but the quote itself is very eloquent. The ultimate step in avoiding periodic wars, which are inevitable in a system of international lawlessness, is to make statesmen responsible to law. And let me make clear that while this law is first applied against German aggressors, the law includes, and if it is to serve a useful purpose, it must condemn aggression by any other nations, including those which sit here now in judgment.
Wow.
Wow.
Really quickly, I'm trying to remember to do this more often. Reminder to any listeners that are just joining, we're here with Alan Ferguson. How recently did you put out the website?
Just before Thanksgiving.
Just for Thanksgiving. Okay, well, check it out. It's crimesagainstpeace.org. Crimesagainstpeace.org. It's very, very good. Really inspirational stuff. I suggest that everyone go check it out.
We'll be right back, folks. And we're here with Bo, yours truly, and Alan Ferguson. All right, we're back. And, wow, we got a bunch of really intelligent callers tonight. Thank you, people. And Alan Ferguson, Bo Franklin, and yours truly. What a great show. Alan, thank you so much for being here. I think that as we grow and expand, I think more and more people will understand the gravity of this subject. And oh my God, it's so important. I think that I just want to say shout out to our callers tonight because it reflects the level of intelligent, people that listen to us. And thank you so much.
I want to say really quickly, reminding everyone, we're here with Alan Ferguson. Once again, go check out the website, crimesagainstpeace.org, crimesagainstpeace.org. And if you have any last things to say, give us a call, 758-8882, 758-8882. I want to say really quickly, I know I had this as my intro probably 3 or 4 months ago, but in my English class, we spoke about how in the Iliad, which was the book we were reading by Homer, Helen is really the pretty face they put in front of this war. They say that thousands of Achaeans and Trojans are fighting just for Helen, even though Helen isn't the wife of any of the soldiers but one on each side, and there's no use for them to be fighting for it. And it's simply, I think, a bigger message that says we put a pretty face in front of war because we war naturally.
Wow.
And
great.
It's very interesting. And I think we can see the pretty face in front of war in every single war we've had so far. Oh, we have a call. Sorry.
Thanks for calling. Listen up. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for calling. What's up?
There's something here that's being overlooked. And it's been, a tragedy in every war that America,
right,
or any other country,
right,
it's the people that are sent there to fight it.
That's right, that's right.
That is done to them. And what it does, the damage it does to the countries, those people go back to their countries, United States, Russia, it doesn't matter. And they're, they're ruined.
That's right. That's right.
I think...
And, you know, I think every country that is engaged in a war or any supplier of weapons should be mandated, you know, there should be a mandate that makes them put in, you know, like 40% or something of what they make to, you know, not their gross, but their net, but, you know, to help these people.
Yeah, I think
because the United States, they don't take care of their veterans. Because I'm a veteran myself.
Were you from Vietnam? Are you?
They use us, and they throw us away.
Are you a
vet? Careless.
Vietnam or Iraq?
Vietnam.
Wow. Well, thank you for your service, man. We super appreciate what you've done, and we are sorry for the lack of like attention that has been paid to people like you that have worked so hard, man. Oh my God. Thank you for the call. It means a lot to.
I mean, even the guys in Iraq and stuff. I mean, they're getting treated like. I can't say that word, but they're treated very bad.
But you know what?
I mean, medically, you know, psychologically, etc.
PTSD, man, it rules. And listen, I want to just, this means so much to me, man, that you called, because you need to keep reminding people like us that have a voice, that are in the media, because, oh my God, man, I don't know what to say. We are humbled. We are absolutely humbled at what you have gone through. And thank you so much, man, for reminding us. Thank you so much for this call. It's really important that you just called in and said this, because I'm on the same page with you, man. I have a bunch of friends. I have a half a dozen people that did Nam. I have a half a dozen people that did Iraq. And they're really messed up. And thank you so much, man.
And there's nothing you can do for them. I mean, they're gone for good, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, you might as well throw us in the trash can, because that's what they want to do. But, you know, they don't want to do anything. They don't even want to deal with us.
But at least, oh, my God, man, thank you. You know, you need to have a voice, man. You know what? If you'll give me a phone number, would you like to come on the show and let us interview you?
I don't know that really.
You need to have a voice, man. What people need to hear what you're saying right now.
Yeah, that's right. And you were right when you said that we hadn't really addressed this part of the issue, and it's an extremely important part. And you obviously have the personal experience that will show people what it really is. Whereas if I tried to, I couldn't, because I haven't personally experienced it.
I think the bigger idea here is there's no winners in war. The people who fight aren't winners.
You're exactly right.
The people who lose aren't winners. The people, I mean, everyone's affected. The people who are innocent, the people who are fight, the people who are fight on both sides. I just don't think there's any point.
The only winners is that 1% of the 1% that make the decisions about the world.
And right. Make the profit, yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, man, listen, I'm very moved by your experience and your call. Is there any way that I can find my way back to you? I want you to think about you. It would be really neat.
I can give you my number off the air, but
okay.
That'd be fine.
Okay, but listen, I want you to consider coming on the show and talk about this, because it's so important. People have no idea what, like, you know, like people that you are dealing with, man. This is so important. Please, let me give you my number, okay? I'm going to just blurt.
Hold on a second.
Grab a pen.
We don't have a ton of time, Marcus.
Yeah, we're all right, man. Let him do. This is important.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm sorry.
No worry, man. This is important.
What's the number?
751-1307. 751.
That's in Taos, right?
Yeah, 751-1307.
And your name again?
My name is Marcus. And I want you to call me. And in the meantime, just think about it. I would really love it that you would come on this show and talk about your experience, because you guys are like not getting a voice. You guys are not. This is so important. I'm so moved that you call. Thank you so much, man. Think about it. And I know that it's really weird and out of your program to come on a radio show, but it would be so important that if you did. And thank you, man. Call me, okay?
I will.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a really important statement, is those who fight in the war, those who experience war in their countries, those who are affected by war in any way, don't win. It's not a positive experience. It takes away your loved ones, and I think that's just not something that we need in our countries right now. So maybe stop seeing war as this horrific, as this heroic thing that, I guess, brings victory to all the people and the countries who win, but as something that really tears people apart.
Very well said. We've got 3 minutes, guys.
I just got to say, it fits right in there. Lao Tzu's quote, even a victory is a funeral.
Yeah, of course. Even those who win lose people. The people who fight in war don't come back the same. I remember reading a book in that same English class called Achilles in Vietnam, and it compares Achilles' experience in the Iliad and Vietnam soldiers in Vietnam, and it's very inspirational, and it just shows that we have this kind of notion that war's great, and that it's in TV and movies it's seen as like kind of an action cool thing, no one will ever get hurt or injured by it, but it's
almost like video games.
Yeah, and it's oftentimes soldiers go into war thinking that they're just going to win victory and honor their country, but they come out with just terrible PTSD and just totally different people. We're just going to touch on something really quickly before we leave. How war and the environment connect. Alan, do you mind saying something quick about that?
Well, there's so many connections that I can't begin to cover it, but the U.S. military is the biggest consumer of fossil fuels in the world, I believe.
It's true. That's absolutely true.
Which means that it's the biggest source of greenhouse gases.
Carbon.
Yeah. That's just one connection. Another is the radioactivity of various things, including the production and maintenance of nuclear warheads and the use of so-called depleted uranium weapons, which has caused, at least it's believed to have caused, many birth defects in Iraq. And there are many others, too.
Also, in Vietnam, I think was the beginning, I guess it was World War II, was the beginning of chemical warfare. And after that, the UN signed a treaty saying that they wouldn't use chemical warfare. But, of course, Syria went against that, and that's why the U.S. was planning to go into. However, you can see not only the effect of the chemical gases and things like that on the people, but also on the environment. For example, Vietnam has a lot of birth defects as well from the chemicals they used in that war.
We have, like, destroyed Vietnam with Agent Orange, and people that are listening that know about that know what I'm talking about. Agent Orange, we've let you know, it's genetic damage for generations. Oh, my God. We're out of time. Alan, thank you so much, my man.
You're welcome.
Promise Bo and I that you will come back. This is going to be a continuing forum. Oh, my God. Alan, you have really bit off a big chunk. Thank you so much, man. Oh, my God.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on, Marcus.
No, thank you.
One last reminder to everyone, crimesagainstpeace.org. Check it out. It's amazing. I think it's really worth everyone's time.